Hello, everybody. I want to welcome you to Raw Spill, where we keep it real with the whole truth. Glad to have a special guest with me on today. It's Amara Hall, and today she seems like she wears a lot of hats. She's just so much. I ain't gonna do no justice. I'm trying to introduce her, so I will let her introduce herself to you. And she had an interesting been over in, I believe in Egypt. She had a near-death experience. If anybody that's been following this broadcast, I'm very always interested in hearing about people's near-death experience and what they see on the other side, what lessons that they learn from there that they can teach us. So, Miss Hall, first of all, thank you for agreeing to come on to share your story. And I'm very interested in hearing about your near-death experience, what you got out of it. So yeah, you could take this time to tell the people about yourself and get right into your near-death experience that happened in Egypt for us.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Harold. I really, really, truly appreciate being with you and your audience. And I often tell this story, and the near-death experience, of course, is the most transformative experience. But I reflect back, my journey actually started when my dad died. I was 35, and I was going through a divorce at the very same time. And I was so stressed out, so exhausted from all of the, emotional turmoil. I went to my doctor and he diagnosed me with a life-threatening illness. He told me to go home and prepare my affairs, that I was going to die and that I would end up in a wheelchair for the rest of my life. And I really hit rock bottom. I've got to tell you, when I thought things couldn't get worse, depressed wasn't even the word to describe it. I didn't think things could get worse, but then I got fired. And I spent the next 7 years on a journey exploring healing modalities and alternatives. And I started to appreciate the small things in life. But it was me grappling with this notion of what happens when we die, that I began studying the ancient mystery schools and meditation. And that I all of a sudden had this mysterious urge to go to on a spiritual pilgrimage to Egypt. And it was there that I had a near-death experience outside the Valley of the Kings, where all the ancient pharaohs' tombs are buried. And that's when I left this world. And coming back to Earth was an incredibly daunting experience because I found myself hurling through the vast expanse of the universe and headed towards a familiar small blue planet. And then it was the sound of Arabic voices that lured me like a beacon to my last known location. And it was felt like coming into the body was actually far from easy, smooth sailing, because it felt like I was struggling to put on wet clothes. And the blinding sunlight was piercing and it was painful and it disoriented me. And all the while, I was very disoriented. Thank goodness I had my dear friend with me, because I had this strange feeling like my body all of a sudden overtook my will, and I felt like my gut was going to explode. So there I am, right in this very rustic village area, and my friend took care of me until my energy was restored. But then it was the whole time I felt like a brand newborn baby. I felt this incredible bliss and peace and love. But at the same time came with it this absolute clarity that it was surreal and it was disturbing, because I started to understand that I was seeing things that other people weren't. These otherworldly beings and mysterious phenomena that you defied explanation. It actually felt like I was stepping into a scene in the Cantina scene in Star Wars. It was a strange world of unfamiliar sights and sounds. But the real challenge became when I returned to the United States, because again, I felt like my life was unraveling, falling apart, and my friends drifted away. And once again, I got fired from a six-figure job. And that's when I went on a quest to find out what happened to me. Where did I go that day? Something was different. I was different. So I went to about a dozen different psychics, mystics, and healers, and they all told me something different. So for me, that really angered me, quite honestly. It ticked me off until I found a healer that told me I had stuck energy. So then that made perfect sense. It gave me hope and it gave me something to do to process. And he told me, he said, your anger, your anxiety, your depression is all because you have stuck energy. So I went on that healing journey. And it wasn't until I found myself on a massage table about 9 months later. Continually, I was on this quest, like, where did I go? What happened? How come I didn't, if I died, how come I didn't see the tunnel or this divine being, Jesus? And so it wasn't there that I actually had an out-of-body experience. And that's when I was given a vast expanse, awe-inspiring tour of the all. And I was told I couldn't stay. And that I stepped into what I called the fabric of all creation. It was like a moving kaleidoscope of color and light. And my guides told me it was love. And love was the fabric of all creation. And then it showed me, and I actually saw the actual energy that powers the universe. I didn't have words for it today, but I now understand it's the quantum field. It's how everything is created. And that's when I saw my life review. But only my life review was, it showed to me like a timeline where my emotions had been stuck. And that was what's creating my dis-ease, my dysfunction, and destruction of my dreams, of my goals, of my health and my wealth. And that I understood then that we are energetic beings and we come here to learn how to manage that what we are, to learn who and what we are. Why are we here? We're here to create. We're here to create what we desire and to have these experiences and lessons along the way. And so from that day forward, the last 23 years now, I have been teaching other people how to heal themselves through these energetic tools and techniques, and how to step into their own superpowers. Because that day, as I said, I became different. My psychic abilities turned on, my natural healing abilities turned on. And that's where I spent about 9 months to a year actually refining and healing myself. Because when I went to learn how to do that, I had no intention of doing this professionally or continuing. And so the joke is on me. So that pretty much sums it up.
Yeah, just tell me, how did you wind up in that near-death experience? What do you remember, like,
oh,
what
it yeah. You yeah. want to know the real juice, right? How did I flip out of my body? Well, here's the deal. I was making jewelry at the time. Okay, I had this amazing spiritual tour that was incredibly powerful. We would meditate in various temples. I would hear angels, like I thought they were angels. There could have been the mystics of the temples from ancient times. I was hearing and seeing things in just the normal everyday, of our tour. But after the tour, I extended my stay. So I went back from Cairo to Luxor, out just outside the Valley of the Kings. And I was visiting with my friend and I wanted to buy some beads for the jewelry that I made. I wanted to incorporate some, let's say, antiquities into my precious jewelry. So the very last day, the second last day, I found these beads. And you see, in Egypt, these houses are perched on the back of a mountain. And everybody's home, the back wall touches the mountain, right? So they're digging in the mountain for treasures or for tombs or for, buried treasures. And they would cover the back wall with a carpet. That's how I knew that there were probably going to be treasures in somebody's hands, or they found these little trinkets maybe they'd want to sell. So I went back. When I found them, I went back to pay the gentleman, Mohammed. And when you're buying something there, especially if you're a friend, you sit and you visit. You have a cup of tea. You have a cup of Coca-Cola. They show you their pictures of their babies and their children and their and everybody's cousin. And it goes on and on. It's quite a social, you know, event, which is lovely. But for me, they brought out the pot. And I said, thank you. I don't smoke. I don't smoke, and I've tried pot maybe less than half a dozen times, and it really never, ever did anything to me. Plus, before I had gone to Egypt, I had done a 30-day detox, and the last 7 days of my detox was pure juices. So my system was real clear. So I refused. I said, no, thank you, politely, but he was just so insulted. And he just blew a gasket, and he's shouting, and yeah, it's the best, it's the best. So it was quite a commotion, and I was the only female there. So I thought, you know what, I've tried pot before. I'll just, you know, be polite, be graceful guest here, and, you know, I'll be on my way, because it never really gave me a high. It didn't give me anything, right? So the joint went around twice. And everybody bounced up, ready to walk out the door, and I couldn't get out of the chair. I found myself standing behind my body, and I kept going back and forth into my body. And I thought to myself, and I still don't know to this day if I said anything. I must have said something, but I put my hands out in front of my face. If I could just get some water, if I could just splash my face, I will snap too. I will keep myself here. And I remember a friend getting close to me, and he walked in slow motion and he poured some water in my hands. The whole time I was seeing everybody's, it was like everybody else's life review. I was seeing all of these television sets playing a different movie type thing. And I was trying to stay in my body. I kept finding myself standing behind my body, back in, back out, back in. And I thought, if I could just splash my face. So the last thought I had was, oh shit, my mascara is going to run. Just more worried about how it's going to look in depth. But yeah, so that day and that from that moment forward, I don't remember. And so until I started coming back into my body, but they told me that I stiffened, my body fell onto the floor. I was sitting in the only chair they had in the room. Small plastic garden chair. And I collapsed. I stiffened. They were pounding my chest with all their might. With my friend said he used his fist. And he said, later he asked me, he says, isn't your chest sore? He goes, I just about smashed your heart and your ribs, you know, to get your heart pounding. He said, your breathing stopped. Your heart stopped. So it was some time later, they ended up dragging me out under the arms. They loaded me up outside into a pickup truck, into the cab. And that was their taxi on the West Bank. Okay, it's very primitive. So the people, they had benches in the back of the bed. And then people would just jump on, you know, and that would be their taxi ride. But they put me in the front of the cab. My friend was sitting in the middle, and they propped me with my head out the window so I could get oxygen. So they figured that would give me some ventilation. And it was hot. It was real hot. It was probably about noon. So then that's when I started hurling back to my body. And I described what I saw coming back to Earth. And the interesting thing is, I remember touching my friends. I couldn't open my eyes. It was incredibly bright and painful. And I thought, as my gut was ready to explode, I'm thinking, oh God, you know, where are they taking me? And I didn't know what had happened. I really was felt utter and total bliss. And my friend started shouting at me in Arabic. And then he realized, oh God, she doesn't understand Arabic, so I've got to speak in English. So he shouted, oh, the hospital, we're taking you to the hospital. And the only thought I had was, oh my God, we're in the village of the desert. The hospital will kill me. It's going to be so primitive. It's, you know, yeah. And they were thinking, oh my God, where, how do we find a toilet? there was no Western toilet. There was no public place they could take me because in that area of where I was, there were just holes in the ground to do that. And so then that was sort of like the whole comedy of the whole scene is I didn't know what they were thinking and they didn't know what was happening for me. So there's another layer to this because the Arabic culture, a man can't go into a bathroom with a woman. Okay, and here I didn't know it, but I can't stand. So they had to take me. There was no female around. They had to take me into a bathroom or somewhere to deal with that. And then, so it was one thing after the other that complicated it, and the stress of it was monumental.
Yeah, that is something that we were speaking with Mary Holmes. She's sharing her near-death experience when she visited Egypt. When you had your experience, did you come into any like ancient spirits or anything that seemed, you know, dark and evil, demonic?
So,
body?
So yeah, great question. There's two parts to that. So the fact that I didn't see that, so here's the deal. This was before the internet, right? I had nowhere to really reference this or, you know, I felt a lot of shame because of the pot and because of the situation. When I did speak to a few people, all they said was, oh, you were really stoned. That must have been some good shit, you know? And that didn't sit with me very well because one, it doesn't matter if you're a regular, you know, drug user or not. So when I got off the plane in New York that day, let me back up. As I was recovering on the bed, I started to see this goddess called Sekhmet. She has a lion's face and a female body. And when I would look at the armoire, I would see Sekhmet. And then I continued to look outside the window, the valley, Green Valley Nile, and the mountains in the background. And the wind, the breeze was fluttering these draperies. And all I kept thinking was, I've got to look outside. That's real. Because when I look straight ahead, that ain't real. So that's when I started seeing these otherworldly beings. And at the same time, I didn't know what was really going on. By the time I got to the airport, my tour guides had extended their stay. They were there in line with me. And I said, who's this lion face with an Egyptian body, a female body? And they said, oh, that's Sekhmet. She's the healer of healers. She was known to all the doctors as the patron saint, so to speak, right? So they would pray to her, and she was coming to me. And I'm like, well, what the heck is this? One, I didn't know I died. Two, I didn't know that because I had some spiritual and mystical experiences before, I wasn't sure or saw correlation or anything, right? But it wasn't until I got to JFK, got off the jetway, and I saw all the people in the airport as walking paper dolls. So at this point, I am totally freaked out. I'm totally in shock and distress. And I have nobody with me. I had a book with me, but I was reading my book upside down. I just wanted to look at something that was real. I wasn't still physically completely in my body, I don't think. And this was probably 24 hours later. I was still coming back into the body, reintegrating. And so, you know, by the time I got to San Diego, that fresh air, when I got off the airplane and that moist air, that seemed to shift. And I stopped seeing people like that. And that's why I went on the hunt to what happened to me. And if I died, how come I didn't get to see no tunnel and Jesus? I was really angry. I got ripped off, right? So, and I also in my own head said, well, this couldn't have been a real near-death experience then. But I'll tell you, I went even as far as I went, had gone back to Egypt another time. And my friend took me to a holy man in the south, in Aswan, where they had the famous dam. And so I asked this holy man, they call him a sheikh, and please tell me what happened to me. You know, where did I go? I'm different now. I'm the same person, but I'm different. And he told me, he said, in his words, in his interpretation of Arabic, or into, you know, what this phenomena was. He said, you didn't die, but you went very, 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 very far away. Yeah. So, I mean, I hung on to those explanations for the longest time until I came across Dr. Deepak Chopra's book, when I started to understand the things that I was seeing and how I was seeing things. I now understand that I can see energy. So the out-of-body experience gave me a better understanding of what that energy was, and that it is how we create, and it permeates absolutely everything. We are energy. It is everything that we see, do, think, and understanding that that energy is creating the good things in our life, it's creating the bad things in our life, and that we are sort of the conductor of the orchestra. And what is it that we want to live? How do we want to experience it? I struggle every single day to get back to that point. I mean, I feel it, but it's not the same. It's not like you can completely plug in and get it. You know, it's one of those things, and I think that's because we're human. We're not supposed to have and hang on to that spiritual knowingness connected to the divine or to the love nonstop. I think that's rare, and that's what we're all desiring, to get back to that one source.
Oh, wow, this is something. So we saw people at the, because of paper dolls, but now was that, now you think, were you saying like another realm, or were you seeing people on spirit man? Which,
what I've figured out or surmised is that I was stuck in a dimension. I was stuck in that anger, the grief, the despair. And I remember sitting there in Atlanta thinking, oh shit, am I living in the land of paper dolls? And I couldn't quite comprehend that that was my reality also. And I think that next 9 months was that time period. Talk about 9 months, that's kind of a, you know, the whole gestation time. But perhaps that was that integration that I was experiencing to realize that I don't have to play or live in that realm. And we all are kind of hanging out in fear and limits and, you know, competition, and all of that low vibrational energy is keeping us all, keeping humanity stuck.
So during this experience, were you like given any, I guess any lessons while you was on that side? Maybe that can you know, help.
Well, yeah, in the out of body experience, that's when I started to understand that I'm energy, and where I stepped into the fabric of creation, and I didn't know what, because literally it was like stepping into the hall of records. So in that out-of-body experience, I was shown, first of all, I sort of melted, and then I elevated into this sphere of light. And then I was taken, it was almost like in the snap of the fingers, into the first stop, they told me, the tour of the all, was like this, it was a building. And it appeared like I immersed into a conference room. And in this conference room, it seemed like a dozen persons. They were all dressed identical. They were dressed kind of like suits with no ties, but they were all the same. And I was sitting at the front, and all of a sudden it was like their heads were glowing, filled with light. And the tops of their heads opened up like a teapot. And this beam of light streamed out of their heads into mine. And they told me that whatever I needed to know, I had instant access. And from that moment, it was like a snap of a fingers, I was ushered directly into this massive corridor. It was an infinite hall of doorways. And it wasn't for some time later that I actually said, geez, I think I just stepped into the hall of records. And so call that the Akashic Records or call it the Hall of Records, you know, it's up to you. And I was told I could step into any door and my choice, but I couldn't stay. And so the first door I stepped into was the door on the right. It was a gold door. And I didn't step into it. It was like a vroom, you're in. And that's when it felt like I was in this moving kaleidoscope of color, spinning and moving. And all I said was, like, I lost sense of who I am or where I am or my identity. And I said, what is this? And they told me that this was the fabric of all creation. This is who you are. And this is what everything is. This is love. So I remember feeling like maybe I was in my mother's womb, where you feel safe, you feel warm, you feel, you know, everything is just perfect. And then, boom, it was like I was rudely knocked out of that space. I remember thinking, well, geez, oh, that was, I wanted to stay. And then they kept saying, you can't stay. And they knew that, right? They knew that we as humans or our spirit doesn't want to be here in the hard stuff, doing this life experience in 3D. So then I went out to the middle of the corridor and I walked directly across and I walked into a pink door. And as I merged through the door, I stepped into what was like a green, solid green emerald. It was opaque. It was very still. There was no movement. And I asked, where am I? And they explained. And that's when I saw my life review. They showed me that I was creating the dysfunction in my life with my emotions, where they had been stuck in my life on issues, on a belief perhaps, or all my emotions, how those had directed the energy to create the experiences I had. And I knew in that moment that I had to go home and I had to detox my mind, detox my emotions, and learn about managing. So that was how I found the next phase.
So speaking of these guys, what were these guys? Were they, were they angels?
The best I can describe it is it felt like a light, like an egg-shaped light. And they didn't communicate like you and I. It was through thought. It was almost like the thought was in my head. And I knew it wasn't me thinking it, right? It was just that was the telepathic communication. And whether, you know, it could be argued that it was my higher self guiding me. It could be argued that it was my angel or my guide, but I didn't see it as wings, or I didn't see it as Jesus or anything like of that nature. It was just a neutral, wasn't a gender associated with it. It was just a neutral sense of something that was ascending or like masterful. Just knowing the laws of the universe or guiding me to where I needed to go.
That is something. No, you was, now you say you took a, you're smoking a joint. What do you, I mean, you was laced with anything. From what I understand, you know, people, you know, and I'm not saying, sometimes, I'm not saying, you know, no drug use or nothing like that, but I know when some people, they may take certain drugs or whatever, that seemed to, I get open up something, like a portal into the realm. So I'm wondering whether that joint maybe late to something or.
Well, here's the deal. We're never going to know, right? It was 23 years ago. But what I did do is I initially thought I had a heart attack or I had a heart defect. I mean, that was my first go-to. So they confirmed that my heart stopped and my breathing stopped. So I had nothing else to go by because I'm sure the hospital wouldn't have had anything more than what do you call those heart measures. So coming back to the States, I had a whole blood test and had a whole rundown. And the doctor told me I was low on some amino acids. And he said, Amira, do you understand that more people die of dehydration than you would ever think? And so it could have been the fact that I was dehydrated. So that chemical reaction within the pot just knocked me completely out of my body. I am a sensitive to any kind of meds, prescribed meds or any others. So I know myself. I know I can't really tolerate it. Now, it may have been laced. I don't think so. I think it was just straight pot, but real strong, good Egyptian pot back in the 90s. Okay, that was 1998. So now, what was I going to say about the drugs? Yeah, and other people had said to me, that was great hallucination and blah, 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 but it continued. That was my argument to myself. And, all these years wondering what the hell happened to me. I'm completely different. And the spiritual transformation that I experienced from that moment. So, yeah, my pineal gland was triggered and opened my clairvoyance. In fact, I couldn't go, that the reason why I started to isolate and close down and was depressed when I came home is because I was seeing things that, like I said, other people couldn't see. And I was overwhelmed. I was freaked out and I couldn't go shopping. I couldn't go to the market. So that's pretty much what happened. And there's just so much to talk about here, Harold. But one thing I can tell you over the years, as my psychic abilities have opened up, and my clairvoyance is open, my clairaudience is open, my claircognizance. And this is what I teach people because I believe every single person has these abilities. We come pre-programmed, it's our computer, our software, this is all software. I help people clear their energy channels so that those open. Now, one thing I can say is many people that I've witnessed and worked with, they may have, like this one guy that I was recently talking to, his name was Charlie, here where I live, and he started having these mental breakdowns. And the doctor diagnosed him as bipolar and borderline schizophrenic because he was seeing things and hearing things, et cetera. So when we worked together, I said to him, I said, and this guy's probably in his mid-50s. I said, I see drugs. I see drug energy. And I don't know how I see it, Harold, but I can just see where the energy centers get damaged. And sometimes those portals get too wide open. And that's when, like me, I was probably channeling everything and stuck on another dimension. And I had to work to close it down. But some people that have done damage to their energy field or their chakras by doing extensive drugs, they are screwed. It can only be fixed so far in most cases. So in his case, his chakras, his channels were wide open. And then we it's almost like a muscle or a sphincter, they close and certain vibrations we can control unconsciously. And if that's sort of ripped open, it's like a hole or a tear away tear. And there's like a perpetual, rotating door. And these beings will come in and they haunt people. And it's no difference with a haunted house or a doll that's possessed. There's portals and nothing is inanimate, right? We think a stone or these glasses or this desk are solid. They're not. They're energies. So things can permeate them and hook onto them and manipulate them.
Speaking with Amara Holmes is sharing her near-death experience and and things what's going on the other side. And yeah, if you don't mind, if you can touch on like these giving women like deathbed visions. Sometimes people say that. I know recently I saw a video of a lady. She was well, she passed on. She was like 97, but her granddaughter was saying that since she was transitioning, and she just kept calling for her mother, things of that nature. So she was pretty much in a state where you were like not quite, but on the way of transitioning out of here, but was able to, I guess, see what she thought was her mother.
Right. Well, I think what happens is the veil is thinning, and you don't even have to be on your deathbed to see our loved ones on the other side. I think more and more people, their own abilities to see, like I was talking about, is as we clear energy and also the energy on the planet and the universe is shifting right now. So many more people are starting to see things and know things and telepathically receive messages they don't know, they don't understand. And I've been saying this for probably 10 years now. People are going to freak out because they won't know how to manage it. Kind of like me, where I was when I first started. I had to learn how to manage it. We can shut it down and we can open it up. We can also learn to manage it and use it like a smartphone. Duh. We can have all of that information within ourselves. But I remember a dear friend of mine. He was actually on his deathbed. He was dying of AIDS, and his sister and I were together. He was at hospice, and we knew the time was close. And the hospice care worker called us, and we were just in the other room down the hall. And literally, so he was getting ready. She called us. We came running down, and he had just left. He just took his last breath as we walked through the door. So my friend was grieving over her brother, and I was standing at the foot of the bed. And I literally had this vision. First of all, the light above his bed flashed, and I was just kind of stunned. I was in this very neutral, tranquil place, total stillness. My mind wasn't racing. I wasn't anything. And literally, I saw him. It was like he stepped in my mind. I saw him step into a cloud, and he walked through that cloud, and there were all his friends and family cheering for him. And what was really funny is he was gay, and he was a makeup artist from Hollywood, and he was super conscientious about how he dressed. And he had this gray, it was a camel colored cashmere jacket. Like he was dressed to the nines, right? As he was greeting all his friends, and he sort of sashayed there into that space. And he looked back, and he could see his sister Candy grieving over his body. And just like a tug of war, like, oh, I don't want to leave her, And then he went, ah, she'll get over it. And it was totally his personality. He just kept on going, oh, she'll get over it. And when I told her, she just cracked up, In between the tears, she could totally see Brian doing that. So that was really cool. And it's funny too, because people say to me, well, how come, my husband isn't communicating with me, or their loved one, their spouse. And usually I find in the initial stages, it's because you're so close to them that there's almost a resistance to the connection of the communication. And that's why having a spirit medium like myself can help bridge that space. But my own ex-husband took his own life. What's 2.5 years ago now, just at the end of COVID. And well, I don't know, is it still going on? Some people's minds it is. Anyway, he took his own life, and so it was not only a shock to me, but it was hard for me. He wasn't messaging. He wasn't coming through like I would connect with somebody's grandmother. And I thought that was strange. So what I do is when somebody takes their life and they're stuck in this, it's a still place. They're not really going anywhere. They don't go to the light. They're just stuck. And so I give them a healing and connect them to the Supreme Being. And it took time. It was probably a good year. And as he, I don't know, thawed out, he started realizing, that there was something going on behind sides. By the way, he was agnostic. He didn't believe in God, even though he was raised Catholic. And he had just a lot of stuff go on in his life that he shut it all off, right? So, actually, surprisingly enough, a couple months ago, I'd just be walking down, my path on my walk. And all of a sudden, I could hear him talking to me, and he was giving me pictures and reminding me of some of the fun stuff that we did together. And it was weird because he sort of had the the personality of a teenager or somebody in their 20s that was cavalier and nonchalant. It wasn't the guy that was way more serious when I met him, you know. So it was interesting because it was almost like his spirit was warming up or waking up and showing me how much he loved me and how much he tried to really please me, and where I was being a pain in the ass, right? And so it was a healing for me. It was a healing for him as his spirit was able to communicate with me. It's really beautiful. Yeah.
Something. Let me ask you about this. I know you even said you got spirits out there that can, you know, haunt people. So do you think it's possible, you know, sometimes, you know, like I said, you know, some people communicating with a relative or something that's passed on. How would they know that's not another spirit that's fooling them? That's the sky there.
Well, that's a great question too. And pardon me. Interesting. All of a sudden, I'm getting choked up. Oh boy, that's a sign that somebody's trying to tell me something. All right, can you hear me okay?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, great, Harold. I'll tell you a story with a client that I just was connecting with the other day. And I said, you know, I've got a grandmother here on your mother's side. And she said, well, I didn't know her. And I said, okay. So I just left it at that. And then this woman gave me a letter. It was a card or an envelope. It was sealed. And she just showed me as she was giving her the envelope. And she said, this you'll understand in time. And it'll explain everything. And she said, and I said, it was like she knocked on your door, slipped this little envelope into the mailbox, and then turned around and walked down the steps and walked away. Spirit often tickles my throat when they're trying to come through or somebody's trying to give me a message. I think somebody listening to this has somebody that they're trying to connect to and they're starting to come through. So what my client said to me, she goes, Amira, she goes, we didn't know my mom's mom, and we just found out that she had a different birth mother, and nobody knew that it was another mother, that her adopted mother wasn't her birth mother. And she had passed away, but they had just found some documents and started to understand. And it turns out that her deceased grandmother was a psychic in San Francisco, very famous. And so she goes, it makes perfect sense that she's trying to show me that I'm going to see and understand everything in the right time. Oh boy, I've never had a tickle like this on an interview. But yeah, they can haunt us. Back to your question is, how do we know? Well, I think first of all, that it's like a chicken or egg thing, but we have to find out and know our own energy. If we don't know if some energy is interfering and causing us issues, then how are we going to know we're haunted? Mm. Right? Like in my case, I had to clear the dysfunction and the energy that of grief and depression and limiting thoughts and beliefs. When I started clearing my energy, it's almost like a filter in a room. You know, if I burn some toast, you can't see it. You can sense it, right? And it's not until I put on the air filter or the air conditioner, open the door and move that energy out that you still can't see.
Right.
And so it's like we have to refine ourselves to understand we are energy. When we refine this mechanism, then we'll be like this detector, you know, this little radar device. We'll go, oh, all of a sudden I'm really grumpy. What the hell happened? Some energy just came into me. Whoa. And so that's happening all the time. Haven't you ever Let's say you were in a good mood, and then you got on the phone with somebody, and they're just yeah, and you get off the phone and go, oh man, it feels like someone just poured, some crap all over me, right? And you feel really bad, and that's because they poured their energy on you, and they might have said some nice things, but they had a bad day, or it's their mother or their father's energy. And again, it's not to make mom and dad's bad or evil, but your energy, Harold, was designed. Your soul came into your physical body. Amira's soul came into her body, right? And so my job as a spirit is to understand that it needs to belong in my body, and I need to manage or clear out any other energies. But with when we're born, first thing, all we know is our mother's energy. We think it's us, right? Because we are this pure soul of love and light. We come in and we're into this human form, and we just match the frequency. We feel the love, we feel the safety, we feel protected. When we're born, then we're matching our siblings' energy. We match dad's energy. We're programmed. We are we're literally conditioned all through our life. Don't say this, do this. Yes, ma'am. No, ma'am. Yes, and you can say this, or you can't go here, and you can't. And all of the, yes, they're here to guide us and protect us. But what happens when we get puberty? We start rebelling. What we're trying to do is get back to our original essence. We're trying to figure out who that special someone is, and to identify. That's why, teenagers dress weird, dye their hair, do, braids, all these things, because we're trying to find our own identity. That's our spirit calling to us. And, it's not until we get to like 16 or 17, we start to find our voice, be our authentic self. That's our spirit calling to us to follow a particular path. And so we don't understand. Nobody taught us that we're energy beings, but we have to learn to manage it, monitor it, right? So if I'm possessed with somebody, then I'm going to do bad things, right? Or do things that aren't authentically aligned with Amira, and vice versa. That's why when we drink or do drugs, what happens is those portals open up. And entities and beings, they don't call them spirits for nothing, right? They come in and they go, hoo-hoo, Harold's not home. Let's party on. Because when you're drinking, your spirit leaves. That's why you feel so good. You're not attached to the pain. So your spirit's hanging out outside your body. And those spirits come in. They go, yeah, this is what it's like to be a human. Let's experience this. And they get us to do stupid things that we regret. Right? Isn't that sort of the story of what goes on?
Yes, I reckon so. Oh, hey, I tell you, we speaking with Mr. Amira Hall. We got one final thing before we wrap this up. So, your experiences of, well, I guess during your near-death experience, did you have any glimpse or any knowledge of heaven or hell? While you was out of your body, that you may recall.
The only hell I had was when I entered into New York to the airport, and that continued for, the rest of the day. And actually, the 9 months I was living in hell until I found out about my energy being stuck. And that was the hell. And I think hell is here on earth, because when I was out of my body, just the unconditional love and the peace and the bliss and the power that we are as spirits, I never felt that there was the demons in our minds, or the restrictions and the limits and the suffering is a result of our lack of awareness and lack of ability to manage the energy. It's my interpretation. I felt like heaven was also a realm of bliss, love, peace, and knowing, and being connected to all.
Okay. All right. Well, this was Mira Hall. First of all, I do appreciate you for taking the time out to share your experience. And you got several books out. But before we get out of here, could you want to tell the people how they can get some of your material, or how we got a website, or how they may be able to get in contact with you?
Absolutely. Thank you, Harold. I would like to invite people to visit my website, amirahall.com. And I think you can put the URL in the show notes. But it's A-M-I-R-A-H and then Hall, H-A-L-L.com. And I'd like to invite you, if you have some questions or if you'd like to learn about clearing your energy, I accept calls, so you can book a call with me. You can get my books all on Amazon. Manifesting Miracles 101 is the guidebook that I use for mentoring my clients. And I have a book called Love Up Your Life that gives you steps to creating love in your life, whether it's a love relationship or just loving yourself, everything in between. So those are the two highlights. And the latest one was The Essential Guide to Spiritual Awakening. I've got a YouTube channel. You can check me out at Amira Hall. And I'm live all weekday, every weekday at 11 a.m. Eastern. So love to see you there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you want to say something else?
I wanted to give a gift. I wanted to give a gift called Stress Buster. It's a guided visualization to help people start to clear out those energy blocks. You don't have to know where they are, or you can be just feeling like something's not working, and you go to www.amirahall.com/stress, S-T-R-E-S, and S as in Sam, dash Buster, B-U-S-T-E-R. So it's like an energy shower, and just start feeling good no matter where you're at and what's going on. We all need it these days.
Oh, yes. I want to thank Amira Hall for joining me today. And really appreciate you taking the time to share your knowledge of your experience of what happened on your near-death experience. And again, I thank you for tuning in. And those of you that's maybe listening to this in the future or whatever, I hope you got something out of it. Till next time. God bless you all.